Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Now, 51551 is our text number, and Joe at rt.ie. It's 24/7, 365. Now, just a couple of things we're going to do. First of all, some good news. Mark, who was on the programme yesterday, who was brilliant in that he came back from Venice with his wife and child, young child, about 10 days ago, felt a little bit unwell and uneasy, and immediately the three of them went into self-isolation, and they've been managing fine. And then on Friday, the symptoms changed somewhat, and he was the paramedics from the HSE, National Ambulance Service, called out to his house. Two of them dressed in the protective gear and swabbed nose and throat. He was a bit worried in that he hadn't got a reply as of Liveline yesterday, Tuesday. The good news is that he got the results of his test yesterday afternoon, and they are negative. In negative in this sense means there is no sign whatsoever of COVID-19. So that's good news. Secondly, we seem to be a little bit ahead of the curve for this country. I don't know whether it's a sense of community or the size of the country, or the fact that we're an island, north and south, that's helping us somewhat. And a reminder to everybody about washing your hands, sneezing into your elbow. And remember, the reason you sneeze into your elbow and you cough into your elbow is your elbow won't be able to touch your face. If you cough into your hand or sneeze into your hand, you invariably will be touching your face within seconds. So during the next 75 minutes, I'm asking every single listener to undertake to what I'll do with myself, to undertake to, during one of the outbreaks, to undertake to wash your hands robustly. You've seen it so many times at this stage. We have so much information. But in the next 75 minutes, whether you feel you need to or not, you robustly wash your hands, preferably during one of the outbreaks, though we depend on that so importantly as well. But robustly do it whenever you can. And I hope if you have a transistor, I know a lot of people are working off Alexas and all that carry on, a transistor to carry around the house, make sure you have plenty of batteries. Okay, and let's begin. Agnes, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe.
How are you? Tell us your story.
I've got COPD. I suffer from that a lot.
Okay.
And for the last couple of weeks, I've just been on antibiotics, you know.
Okay.
Constantly. After 1 week, I was gone for another week. But I finished the second go anyway, and I was still no better. So last Monday morning, I went in. Well, I rang up the doctor to see could I see the doctor. I rang about 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And the receptionist says, you know, oh, you can't come in, you've got a cold. And I said, but I need to see the doctor, that's, you know,
okay.
Why?
Yeah, but, yeah.
And anyway, she said, no, you can't come in, and that's that. So a few minutes after, I got a call from the health centre, and they said that your doctor has arranged for an X-ray.
Okay.
So that was all right, I was going to have the X-ray, but 5 minutes after that, somebody else rang back and said, no, we hear you have a cold, so you can't come in here either.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, what am I going to do? So anyway, I rang the doctor back and I said, would you give me a letter for the hospital? I'll go up there and have it done. And they said, yeah, we'll leave the letter here, but you can't come in here for that. You may get somebody else to get it. So eventually, anyway, I got the letter and I went up yesterday morning to St. Michael's.
Okay, now just to point out, you live on your own, as you point out here, Agnes,
yep.
which are two dogs.
Yes.
And one of the things we know positively is that dogs cannot get coronavirus. That's been the, and if any country knows that, it's China, unfortunately. Dogs
yep.
cannot get it. So having your two dogs is pretty important to you, I suspect.
Yes, it is.
Okay, what are your dogs' names?
Jess and John.
Jess and John. Okay. Are they related?
No, they're not related,
okay.
No.
Jess and John. Okay. So, Agnes, no, this is serious. So you get the letter done properly, and you can drive, and you're in your car, and you're,
car.
As arranged, as agreed, you head to the hospital. What happened next?
I head to the hospital, and what happened next was I went in, and I had my X-ray done, and then I said to myself, well, as soon as I can't get to see my own doctor, I'll go into the A&E and see, can I get somebody to look at me in there?
Okay.
So went into A&E, and the minute I said, you know, what I wanted, straight away they put a mask on me.
And what did, sorry, what did you say when you went in?
Well, I said what I'm after telling you there, mm-hmm. that I had was trying to get to the doctor with this chest infection thing, and had taken all the antibiotics.
Right.
So anyway, they put the mask on, and I had to wait for about an hour. So then they brought me into the isolation ward,
mm-hmm.
and did all sorts of exams and blood tests, and even into the artery tests for to see how much oxygen was in the blood.
Yeah.
So the results came back from the X-ray then, and they said I had pneumonia.
Oh, God, yeah.
So they did so many things then. I was getting so many tests. They were coming back and forth and back and forth. Now, I had gone in about 10:30, and it was 7 o'clock when I came out in the evening. But during all the day, they did the coronavirus test, and they have sent that away. So we won't get the results of that now until maybe this afternoon or the morning. Dr. Mullen has after been on to me from Dr. Stephen's Hospital there, the public...
Yeah, the headquarters.
He said, if it's negative, I will get a text message. And if it's not, they'll be down at the gate.
Yeah, to help. But if it's negative, that's good news, as we heard yesterday.
Yeah, well,
from
that
Mark.
Is good news. I'm hoping it's going to be negative because I haven't been anywhere touch with anyone that had anything like that.
And did you leave the hospital last night of your own accord?
I did. I had to leave because I didn't realise when I was going to be so long. And I had left the dogs in, and I had to get home to get them back out.
Okay.
You know, I couldn't leave them here all night. They wanted me to stay, but they...
Oh, did they want
you
to
stay? Know,
okay.
Yeah, they wanted me to stay.
But they did let you go. They didn't resist you leaving.
They didn't resist me leaving, but they gave me a guard of honour out, and they went out and chased all the people out of the car park and everything.
What do you mean they gave you a guard of honour?
Well, the girls with the masks on sort of escorted me out, and they were pushing all the people into the rooms and shutting the doors as we went down the corridor. And when we got to the front door, she told me to wait. And then they went out in the front yard, and there was a couple of people there getting into cars and things. So they said, move your cars out of the way. And they marched me over to the over to my car to make sure that I was on my own.
Yeah, okay.
And that I wasn't going in a taxi.
All right.
You know, so it was a bit of a nightmare, really. I was glad I had the mask on that nobody recognised me.
Okay. And how are you feeling today, Agnes?
Well, I'm sort of, you know, much the same. But they've got, you see, they put antibiotics in my arm intravenously and gave me some steroids. And now they've sent down the thing to the chemist here. So I have to get these other antibiotics. They're apparently very strong ones.
And so, Agnes, how are you managing living on your own?
Well, I have the family sort of very close to me,
okay.
You know, but I mean, it's sort of sometimes it's better on your own.
Yeah, no, I mean in this current atmosphere.
Well, I don't want anybody coming, you know, just in case, you know.
So you hope to know this afternoon. Well, remember, the odds are, now no one can predict, but the odds are, that'll be negative. That you're.
Yeah.
Now, no one wants you to have pneumonia, but they've told you already that you have pneumonia.
Yeah, they've told me I have pneumonia.
And they're treating with antibiotics.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Stay there for a sec, Agnes. 51551 Joe at rt.ie. Marie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Okay, your point, please.
I suppose my point is that they're limiting very much the testing process around this whole coronavirus. And like I started showing symptoms of it on Saturday, but they won't test me because I haven't come from an area abroad and I haven't been in contact with a known case. So I suppose if you're going to keep those limited parameters in place, you're not really going to get a general picture on whether it exists in the community because you're just not willing to test those people.
And did you look? Did you? I can't see your full message here. You say I started showing symptoms of the disease on Friday and self isolated. Did you do anything after that? Did you phone the HSE or look up their website?
Looked up their website and phoned them on Saturday. Basically, they said you don't fit the criteria, so we would just like you basically to continue with normal. So obviously, came out of self quarantine and went about my business. Started to feel a bit better, but then got a very bad cough, and that cough continued, and couldn't get to sleep, so ended up in an out-of-hours GP. And he said the symptoms were very suspicious, but as a result of the current restrictions on testing, that I wouldn't fall into their category of tests, but to be tested. So as a result, we just have to wait in limbo to see if it gets any worse.
So what? I suspect you've, like so many people, you've read up. You're knowledgeable about the HSE website and all the different experts, radio, television, and newspapers. What are you inclined to do, Maria? Are you inclined just to hold steady and stay indoors, and please God, it'll pass?
Yeah, well, that's what you'd hope to do, because at the end of the day, you don't want to be going to a GP office, or you don't want to be going to the hospital. But even though they have recommended to me, they said, we feel you need to be seen. So my advice to you would be to go to a hospital or a GP surgery. But my whole point is, you're telling me to self-isolate in one breath if I have symptoms, but then telling me to go to a hospital or a GP surgery because I need to be seen. So there's complete contradiction of terms.
Okay. And how do you feel today as compared, say, to yesterday or today, Monday?
There's no real change. It's still very much a cough and a shortness of breath. But as of yet, that's where I am. There doesn't seem to be any more worsening of symptoms.
So they didn't offer to send out their rapid response unit to do a test in the house as they did with Mark. Would you be inclined to ring again and ask for that?
Well, I've rang them now twice at this stage, Joe, and they're basically saying, unless you fit the criteria that you've come from abroad or you've been in contact with a known case, we won't test you.
And you fit that criteria for you've racked your brain. There's no one that you helped up a step or whatever that you might not have known where they came from when you were in a shop or whatever.
The only thing we can kind of explain from it is I was in Cork last Thursday, and it would this is what the out of hours GP thinks, that it fits a right time frame for symptoms to appear if you had contracted COVID-19, but he said without knowing the case that you've come in contact with, then you'll never know.
But was the GP, because you did get to a GP an out of hours service, but the GP can summon the National Ambulance Service Rapid Response Unit?
Well, according to the GP, they can't. He said, I spent all day on the phone today to people who are being pushed back from the HSE to them. So he said, we're getting it, he said, by the bucket load.
Yeah, I know people are worried. But the advice, you're saying, on the one hand, you're being told to go to a hospital and you don't want to do that.
No, what they're saying to me is self-isolate because I feel the symptoms.
Okay.
And then on the other hand, they're telling me you do actually need to be seen. So, you'd either go to a GP or a hospital. Now, as I said, I have seen the out-of-hours GP, but he can't test me. Only this, emergency.
Yeah, but what was the final words from the GP?
He just said, basically, I'll give you antibiotics and see if it clears. If there is absolutely no response to the antibiotics in 48 hours, then you need to be showing up at a hospital.
Okay. And you said you were in Cork last week, is that right?
Yeah.
And what part of Cork? Because it was the outbreak there, or the cases there, were located in two hospitals.
Yeah, it wasn't in the hospital now. Okay. It was just
it's a big... It's a big city. Like your chances are very slim, Marie. It's up to yourself. There's so much information out there. You must make the judgment yourself. And obviously, nobody wants to overwhelm the National Ambulance Service. By the way, have you ever had anything like this before?
No, nothing like this before.
Are you within the demographic, or indeed, the other cohort they mentioned with underlying problems.
Medical condition.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have had a family member who has underlying medical health health conditions.
Yeah, but do you?
No, not that extent.
Okay. Yeah. It's up to yourself. Now, this is all part of the national conversation that people hear each other and also work things out as best I can. Stay there, Marie, because Debbie Holland has contacted us. And again, about Agnes mentioning the fact that she had a car and she was rightly told, don't come into the GP surgery, park your car outside and someone will run out or whatever and put the envelope into the passenger seat. Debbie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
51551. What happened, Debbie? It was your daughter.
Well, my daughter is now living in the UK. Mm-hmm. She moved over about 3 years ago and she pops back and forward.
Okay.
And she had booked to come home for a weekend. And this was 2 weeks ago and we were picking her up from Cork Airport. And on the Monday morning, she sort of sent a text to say, you know, she'd been feeling unwell for the weekend. She had a bit of aches and pains and a fever. Now, she was working in the area where they had had the first GP case in Brighton. So the gym that she's the area manager for, she would be working in the vicinity. So I was sort of thinking, well, I said to her, do you think, I phoned her and I said, do you think you ought to stay? Because we just don't know what's going on. She said, no, Mum, I'm at work, I'm fine, I'll come home.
Okay.
And she came home and she sort of wasn't well, and I sort of persuaded her, because if you're young people, they think they're invincible and they think they can deal with things and things aren't serious. So I phoned my doctor. The doctor phoned me back and said, yes, bring her down to the surgery,
mm-hmm.
but do not bring her into the surgery.
Okay.
When we're ready, we'll see her in the surgery itself. But what happened was, the doctor actually came out to the car.
Okay.
I got out the car and he sat in my, you know, the driver's seat.
Okay.
And saw her in the car, asked her a few questions. He did ask me before I brought her down, had she been in contact with any known COVID-19? But as I said, no, she's working in the area, but not any known person.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very difficult for me to say, you know, as she said, the gym that she was running, there could have been any patient from there that might be a gym member. So it was very difficult to know. But what he said was that he did all the checklist. He didn't take any swabs or anything like that, but he just said that she most probably had seasonal flu, and then on top of that, a sinus infection, which he gave her antibiotics for.
Okay.
That
was a good idea of the GP. And how long did the consultation last for in the car?
Oh, not very long at all.
Well, no longer than 15 minutes. Isn't that
longer than 15 minutes.
Whereas if your daughter had gone into a GP surgery, more than likely she would have been there longer than 15 minutes between waiting. Yeah, so that was a good idea.
Yeah, he said, and that was like 2 weeks ago, and I know things have changed a lot now. They have implemented where you have to ring ahead in the surgery, because in rural areas you can just walk in, you know, and wait in the waiting room. Now, she went home with some antibiotics. I did want her to stay. I might have been over-worrying, but I did want her to stay until she got better. But she said, no, I'll get back. But, you know, it's amazing. Even her partner started, you know, he started feeling unwell. And he works in Canary Wharf. And not that he got it, well, we don't know. But there's offices closing down there, you know, all the time with cases and everything. So it's like it's not far away. From the contact of people, you know, in the population, it's only one step away where there's somebody known to somebody that has got the case.
But your daughter is all clear, seen by a GP, and did the right thing, the absolutely right thing. Okay.
He felt she had seasonal flu and nothing else, although we don't know.
And remember, 55 million people around the world have got the flu, and the vast majority of them are fine and well. But 55 million people around the world have got the flu since January the 1st.
Yes, it's absolutely.
The seasonal flu, as they call it.
That's right, yes.
Okay, Debbie, by the way, are you from the UK?
I'm originally from the UK, okay. But I've...
Have you been able to compare and contrast the reaction in this country to the reaction in the UK? Because the reaction in the UK to me sounds at times blasé. I saw Boris Johnson early yesterday morning saying, you know, one option was to let COVID-19 take its course, take its natural Malthusian course through the population, which is pretty blasé. And then you saw him joking at the Commonwealth Service on Monday with the various members of the hierarchy about shaky. Tried to shake their hand and didn't shake their hand, and then seemed to have a good laugh. Am I wrong in thinking that we are taking it much more seriously in Ireland than they are in the UK at the moment?
No, I don't think we've been taking it seriously enough here.
Okay.
I don't think so. I think there's been a grand attitude.
Okay. Well,
there's different thoughts of view about the antibodies. And, you know, once the virus gets out there, you know, we produce the antibodies then to protect ourselves. So we build up the immunity.
Yes.
It's very tricky to say, because if we confine ourselves, we go into confinement for too long a period. When we come out of that, the virus then might go a bit haywire because we haven't built up the immunity. So it's very difficult to know really what the best, how long to contage, what stage we go to next. But I don't think we're that far from Italy. And Italy were very complacent about it all, you know, a few weeks back. And now it's spread greatly there, especially in an elderly population. It's a bit difficult to know, really.
And it's also, the basic message to begin with is to try and delay this as long as possible. By the three basic, the robust washing of your hands, which we'll do. There's an ad break coming. We're asking people to do at least once during the programme, every listener. Robust washing of hands, sneezing or coughing if you do into your elbow, because your elbow doesn't go anywhere. Your clothed elbow doesn't go anywhere subsequently near your face. They're three pretty intensive and basic and simple. The HSE and the authorities saying it's in your own hands, literally. It's in your own hands, and do something about it. Okay, Debbie, thanks indeed. Marie, your family, have you relied on advice from your family, or what are your loved ones thinking at this stage? Because I can hear you coughing there, but...
Yeah, look, at the end of the day, there's nothing we can do. We're still, I'm still okay to a great extent, but I suppose what I'd worry about is... the local GPs are under immense pressure. If the HSE are going to send people with symptoms back to the GPs, they're going to end up crippling the system. And I hate to think the way it's going to look down the line. You know, I think they have to take symptoms like this very seriously, but and maybe stop sending people to the GPs that are concerned about, but just because they don't fit the criteria. They won't test them, and I suppose that's what I'm most concerned about, because at some stage the GPs are going to come across people with COVID-19. It'll wipe out a whole practice.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. Marie, we'll keep in touch, and please God that will pass quickly. And a reminder, not just for yourself when you wash it. Remember, when you're washing your hands, you're not just washing them for yourself. You're washing them for your son, daughter, friends. You're washing them for the community. So now's an opportunity to do it if you want to do it. We're asking people to do it at least once during the programme. And if not, you can do it later on. 51551 joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And joe@rt.ie. Annette, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks. And your situation?
Our situation is a tough one. We currently have a family member who is very, very ill with end-stage cancer. He's currently in a hospital. Don't know if I should name it, but...
No, don't.
Name. Yeah, there is... there has been a confirmed case of coronavirus there, and there are currently a few more put into isolation.
They are in isolation.
They are.
Okay.
Yeah. Our situation is, and it sounds very cold, but it's who do we love more at the moment? If family members go in and it's there, they could potentially bring it home, and we all have young children, or. Because we're on borrowed time, in other words, if we don't go in, you know, do we have tomorrow? If we do go in, are we bringing it home?
Well, first of all, are you allowed to visit your patient who's very unwell, your relative who's very unwell?
Yeah, there is exceptional circumstances. It's now limited to one member per visit.
Okay, and are they gowned up or do they wear
Well, they're
told to wash their hands before, during and after, and probably stay no longer than 15 minutes. 15 minutes.
It depends on the situation. You know, like they were called in urgently last night for a fall. So obviously that would have taken longer than 15 minutes and, you know, making sure he was okay. Do all the things you have to do. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, when she attended, she also has young children. So she had to risk the possibility of bringing it back to her young children. Do you know, but then you're thinking, well, what would you do if it's your father or your uncle or your brother?
Well, the first thing you do is take every single precaution, don't you? Robust washing before, after, and take the advice of the hospital, and then when you get home again, wash again.
I understand, I do, but it's just we kind of feel that like literally life is very short at the moment for him. So, you know, we asked for maybe a possibility of a room on his own, or that. You know, we would be very good at obviously all the hygiene, washing hands. But you know, we can't. You know, you can't look out. And it does sound very cold when I say. But there's other patients in the ward too. One is currently. Last night they were gowned up. Now again, I can't say I'm not a doctor, but he was immediately gowned. The doctors were gowned up and sent into him with a curtain around him. Now that could be anything. That panics you as a person, thinking, Jesus, you know, he's right there. He's literally the other end of the bed.
And the benefit of a private room is that he wouldn't be in, your relative wouldn't be in a ward with other patients.
Yeah, it probably sounds very selfish because I'm sure everybody wants that of their family. You know, I just think that it's like the clock is ticking faster this week than before, if you understand what I'm saying. So it's like to have an opportunity to make the most of his last week or so would be so important for everybody involved, including himself.
And is your relative in obviously in a very difficult situation, but does he communicate?
Yeah, he can communicate. He's quite delirious at the minute, and I suppose in a way, ironically, it's a good thing sometimes because, you know, you're not... Sometimes if you're not with it, you're not really understanding the seriousness of what's happening around him, which is sometimes a good thing. But then in other ways, you know, he can't understand where everyone has gone, you know, or how come nobody's coming in, or, you know, and you can understand a lot of elderly people would feel that way, even in nursing homes at the moment, or, you know, like some people live from day to day waiting on that 1 hour of a visit.
Yeah, I know.
Well,
The other thing is that Dr. Tony Houlihan said last evening that the ban, we had some calls about it yesterday, we didn't get to it, and the day before, but the ban on visits to nursing homes should be lifted.
Yeah.
Like, have you said this to any of the medics in the hospital? Surely their advice would be is not to panic.
Not me personally. I don't have any communication with the nursing staff. Now, they are, by the way, exceptional. I'm not ditching them at all. But it's kind of, and I can understand, it's kind of, well, it's up to yourselves, guys. You know, so I suppose they're thinking, Jesus, we don't want a lawsuit. We walk in here and you go home and your child ends up in intensive care. You know, so I can understand the whole protocol. But it's very awkward. Like, if you, God forbid, fell, broke your leg, I could ring you and say, listen, Joe, you'll be fine. I can't come into you, but you know that we're thinking of you. Whereas when someone is in that situation where his you know, his vitals can change and do change from day to day, you know, it's hard to, it's like you feel your hands are tied. It's like, God, do I love my kids or do I love my, you know, my dad? You know, that's a horrible situation at the moment.
Yeah, it's a very blunt way of putting it.
Sorry, but that's how we feel, you know.
Yeah, but there are precautions you can take, isn't that the advice you'd be given? Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, I kind of think sometimes they could try and make things like, I understand that they're obviously keeping rooms for people who would obviously need isolation and stuff, but like, you know, the option of trying to get them out to a hospice is also on the cards, but can't be confirmed because obviously it just say he does contract corona, he can't then bring it into the hospice.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So you're like in limbo every day.
But I'm sure he's been, like, has there been any reason to have your relative tested for coronavirus?
Well, up until last night, no. But okay. when a whole load of people come in wearing the whatever the regalia to a patient, literally in
the
bed.
Well, maybe that's to protect him rather than simply protecting themselves against
absolutely.
Him.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. I don't have letters after my name.
Okay.
I don't know.
So hopefully, Annette, and it's a difficult situation anyway, regardless of this complication. So to speak. Annette, thanks indeed.
No problem. Thanks a million.
51551. Raisa, good afternoon. Hello, Raisa. Is Fifi there?
Fifi?
Yep, go ahead. Tell me, you've contacted us. What happened?
Well, I'm calling to Liveline just to want to tell people. I know people start in Ireland realize how dangerous and how serious the coronavirus now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think not until this week nobody realized it.
Okay.
The coronavirus just jumped from one cases to 50 cases within 1 week a little bit. So I'm calling to 9 months to tell people, it's a really, really bad disease, and I want to warn people to wear masks. Because as a Chinese, I some of my friends start wearing masks maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago in Dublin.
Yeah.
And people were not nice to them. People kind of think, they bring the virus to Ireland. They have the virus. So they kind of be very, hostile. So, it's not just people wearing masks in Dublin, especially for the Asian group. It's not just because, they have virus. Many of them, they don't have virus.
Yeah, they wear masks.
They wear masks for protection. But people didn't realize how serious the disease is. So people kind of okay. And the government and also the company, they don't allow people to wear masks in public. I don't know why. I just it making me feel you're really, really
no,
bad.
There's no ban on wearing masks in public in Ireland. Where are you from originally, Fifi?
I'm from China.
Okay. And have you been talking to family or friends in China?
Yes, I have. My family, they are not from Hubei province, so they are two province away. None of them got affected. None of them, but they all are quarantined, since the outbreak, late January. They all have been locked in the apartment blocks for now it's over 40 days now. So they are not happy about it.
Okay. When is the most recent time you were talking to them in China, Fifi?
It's just yesterday.
Okay. And how were they yesterday?
They are good. But I know they and the government says the figures is getting less and less and people are recovering more and more. But I don't think, I think they doubt it. I mean, myself doubt it. Because, they Chinese people... haven't been working for over 1 month, over 40 minutes, over 40 days. So the government urged them to work. So I think they just the figures are not correct. So they say, China is getting, and the figures are less now. The numbers in China is getting down. So don't worry about it. Just go to work and to make money. I don't believe that. I don't believe it because the disease is not disappearing just over 2 or 3 days, over 1 week because it's getting so serious in Italy, it's getting serious in France, getting serious in Germany, now in Ireland, the figures jump every day.
Okay.
So I don't believe that. Okay.
And are you saying, Fifi, you would wear a mask normally, but you don't want to wear a mask at the minute because people might target you or...
Yes, one of my friends, she wear a mask in some part of Dublin,
mm-hmm.
and I think it was 3 weeks ago, and the people just push her over to say what's wrong with you? Go back to China. Do you have virus?
My God.
But three weeks ago, Irish people were not some of the Irish people, they didn't realize how bad the disease mm-hmm. could be. They think it's only a flu. So they think it's only a flu. It's no big deal. Only the Chinese people have it. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
So I now... So,
okay,
I think,
say that, Fifi. Let me bring Risa in. Risa, good afternoon.
Okay, good afternoon.
What happened in your case? I know you're from Japan.
No, I'm not from Japan. I'm from China.
No, Risa. I'm talking to Risa. Where's Risa? Risa's just not coming up. Okay. I'm going to take a break and go out. And as I'm asking everyone to do, wash their hands at least once, robustly, at least once during the programme.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And Joe at rt.ie. Let's try Risa again. Risa, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm so sorry for the accident.
No problem. No, it's not your fault. Risa, you're in Ireland on vacation and you're from Japan. What has happened?
When I was in supermarket in Dublin, mm-hmm. a man attacked me and shouted at me because I'm Asian and I was wearing a mask.
Okay.
And then he made a fake cough.
Oh.
And then when I told him like what happened, and he shouted at me and laughed at me, and everyone in the supermarket was looking at me. It was very uncomfortable for me.
Yeah. And what did he shout at you, Risa?
I couldn't understand, but just a very loud voice. It scared me so much.
But it wasn't nice. His demeanor and the way he said it wasn't nice. So it was aggressive.
No.
It was angry what he was shouting at you.
Yeah.
And you believe
he's
it's
angry and left.
And you believe it simply, as you say, because you're Asian and you're wearing a mask.
Yeah, because he made it fake cough. I think it's because of the coronavirus. Hmm. And not just the case. I got so many racial segregations based on where I'm from, especially after the coronavirus is expanding in Ireland.
Yeah. But it's from what we see and have seen before, it's fairly normal for people in Japan and indeed in other countries to wear face masks. Isn't that correct?
Yeah.
It happens a lot, yeah. And
we wear masks just to protect ourselves, even we don't have virus, and as well as to protect myself, we usually wear a mask to protect others.
Mm-hmm.
Because just in case we have virus, I'd love to protect others. And I brought masks from Japan, so I'm not buying from Ireland, so I'm not giving any negative things to Ireland, but I got so many negative things from people in Ireland, so...
Oh, God, I'm so sorry to hear that.
I'm so sorry. Yeah. I really love Ireland, so I really love them to understand why we wear masks.
Yeah, it's fairly normal. Stay there, Risa, because I know you've told us your boyfriend, John Hendrick, is with you as well. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And you're from Ireland, and name and accent, obviously, immediately. Have you been present when Risa has been abused like this?
No, it seems to happen anytime I'm not around. it's happened many times in the city when I haven't been around. You know, she's on vacation, but unfortunately, I still have to work.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a case of she gets, you know, abused all the time. Around the city, especially in Dublin. Well, mainly in Dublin because that's where we are based.
Okay.
But
along Risa arrived here in Ireland when, John, to see you?
January. Okay. Early January. So it wasn't even in Japan at that stage. Well, as she had said before, like she wears the mask to protect herself and others. I'm kind of ashamed nearly to be Irish now at this stage because of the amount of abuse that she gets about it.
I'm surprised that nobody in that soup, I don't want the name of the supermarket, but was it in Dublin?
Yeah, it was indeed. Yeah. I won't name it either just to...
Yeah, no, but I'm surprised nobody in the supermarket checked this man who was shouting at her angrily.
Yeah. I think it's mob mentality. They're afraid. People are afraid to protect other people. And I think, I don't know, maybe they were thinking the same way the guy was. You know, it's just mob mentality, just kind of follow what the aggressor does, you know.
Okay, Risa, how long more will you stay in Ireland?
I will go back to Japan this Saturday.
Okay, and...
Yeah.
Do you and John go back together?
No, just myself.
She's just not back herself.
Okay. And where did you meet John?
We met in Maynooth.
In Maynooth, brilliant. And Risa, what part of Japan are you from?
I'm from Nagoya, central place of Japan.
Okay. And Risa, have you been talking to your family in Japan over the last few weeks?
Yeah, indeed.
And how are they coping with the outbreak there?
My family is not thinking about coronavirus seriously. So they are having a very normal life.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is one of the ways to maintain our mental status peacefully. Because we can't stop our daily life.
Yeah. I'm trying to, I'm looking at the figures. There are number of cases in Japan, 587. Now, for its population, that's pretty low, thankfully.
Yeah.
For example, there's 222 cases as of yesterday in Iceland, and there's 587 in Japan. So Japan must be doing something right at this stage. Well, I know, as you say, there's always a great sense of public hygiene in terms of the masks and activity on the streets. But Risa, you understand from talking to your family that they are not as worried about coronavirus as we are here in Ireland, for example. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Okay, and how long have you? When did you come to Ireland, Risa?
I came to Ireland in 2016 for the first time.
Oh yeah, okay.
It was just only 3 weeks in Greece first, and I came back to Ireland because I love Ireland in 2017 to study in University of Limerick for a year, and now I came back to Ireland again.
Okay, well done. I hope. I'm sorry that befell you. That stupid activity. John, you're staying here, obviously. You work here, you live here, and Risa goes back to Japan.
Yeah, indeed.
Okay.
Yeah, she goes back Saturday.
Okay. Okay, and hopefully you'll see each other again very soon.
Yeah.
Okay. Risa, apologies that has happened to you, and best wishes, and I'm so glad that you love Ireland. And come back soon. And that's just not John talking, it's me talking as well. Come back soon. John, Hendrik and Risa, thank you both. 51551, remember, wash your hands at least once during Liveline.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
51551, wash your hands. Susan Cross. Susan, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Joe.
You're contacting us from your kitchen in Rome.
That's nice. Yes.
Describe your situation.
Well, we're kind of a bit isolated here because luckily I'm able to work from home,
mm-hmm.
But many, many people aren't and their businesses are on their knees. If I go out in my car, I have to fill out a form as sort of a auto declaration of where I'm going, and I can only go out for, you know, specific reasons, one of them being to go to the supermarket to get provisions.
Okay.
The other one would be if I am going on a medical visit, which I will be doing tomorrow, I have to go to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And I could be stopped by the police, and there are very serious consequences if you go out or if you declare something that's not true.
There's a fine, isn't there, if you tell... If you, and
yeah.
But you will have a note to get you to the hospital?
No, I have to fill it out myself. It's a pre-stamped form that everybody has been given.
Okay.
And you just have to fill it in and say where you're going, what date, and what time and where you're resident. And if you declare something that's not true on that form, then you'll be in trouble. But lots of places are open, but there's no customers, like, for example, restaurants, bars,
mm-hmm.
Clothes shops, hairdressers, but there are no clients in them. So it's a little bit of a strange situation. We're not allowed to go to these places, but these places continue to be open.
And when you look out your window in Rome...
It's the most beautiful day. It's like summer.
Yeah, and apparently there's incredible weather for the next few weeks.
Yes, I've just been out in the park doing a 4 kilometre walk.
Okay.
And it was absolutely gorgeous. But there's nobody around. I went to the local cafe to have a coffee on the way back. And there were about 5 customers there, but nobody wearing masks. And everybody is relatively serene about the whole situation. And everybody's taking stock and they're behaving. They're staying indoors. They've asked us to stay indoors. It's the only way to contain this spread.
But there are people still going out and about.
Very few. Okay. But they're going out to parks for walks. They're going out if they have to get their supermarket shopping. Yeah.
And that's allowed. You can walk wherever you want to go.
You can.
And when you went into your coffee shop in Rome, was there any protocols about don't stand too close to the server?
Yes. You have to stand a metre away from the person next to you. And they have signs on the counter to keep you a metre away from the next person. And yesterday I went to the supermarket and you had to line up outside, leaving a metre's distance between you and the other person.
Okay.
And when you get into the supermarket, you had to stand a metre away from the person serving you your prosciutto or your whatever you're buying. And then you get in the queue to pay and you had to stay a metre away from the person behind you. But the supermarkets are all very well stocked. I mean, we're not in any trouble of going hungry. No chance of that. We'll all be fed and hopefully. The restaurants have to close at 6, but they're allowed to do deliveries, home deliveries.
Oh, are they? Okay.
Yes.
And are there many police on the street, Susan? There normally are.
There are police on the street. They're not really. I'm in a very residential area and they're not. I haven't seen any police around here. But my one of my close friends, another Irish lady, yesterday on her way home, she lives in town, said she saw lots of police at 6 o'clock checking that bars and restaurants were really closing.
Wow. Okay. And Susan, in terms of broadcast media, radio and television, are they completely overtaken by the coronavirus?
Yes.
Have they changed their schedules?
More or less. They're more or less taken over by it. Just like in Ireland. I mean, I listen to RTE and News Talk. I shouldn't mention the competitor,
but I listen to both.
Yeah. And I love the Irish radio. I really, really enjoy listening to all of you broadcasters, and I think you're marvellous. But and it keeps me in touch with what's going on in Ireland. Sometimes I know more than my Irish friends because I have a group of friends in Goatstown. We're called the Goatstown Girls. In fact, I'd love to say hello to all of them.
I do, yeah.
And we keep in touch and I manage to know lots of what's going on thanks to the radio.
Right.
Now, but I go home every month.
Okay.
I go to Dublin every month and I've just come back.
And Susan, and again, I say to people, these are just people's opinions and people are entitled to their opinions. We're not living in North Korea and the public are entitled to hear. When I say, Susan, what do you think? You seem to know a lot about what's happening in Ireland. You're living in Rome. What do you think of what's been done in Ireland so far, given your experience in Italy?
Not enough.
What do you think should be done?
Personal opinion.
I know, I understand.
I would close the schools immediately. And the universities.
Yeah.
It's the best way to stop the spread. The children here have all been sent home the past 10 days and they're not allowed to go to other friends' houses, which must be very hard for parents because I can imagine trying to keep children going at that age, you know, school-going age. I have 2 grown-up sons, but it's very hard to occupy small children and keep them going all the time. I see them in the park. They're all out in the park. I'm lucky to live next door to a very nice park.
Okay.
So there's lots of kids out with their parents, you know, because everybody's teleworking.
Now, what about the scenario that no one can second guess the government and the health experts, but that they're trying to hold off as long as possible before they shut the schools, because once you shut the schools, after a while, cabin fever will set in. After a while, people will get fed up. After a while, people will want to go back. If people have to take time off to mind the children, to go back to work,
I think cabin fever is a lot better than getting the virus.
Okay. Cabin fever is a lot better.
Cabin fever, we can have
coronavirus.
I mean, I'm on my second day of teleworking. I work for the UN. I'm on my second day of teleworking, and it's tough. At lunchtime, I went out for a long walk because I wanted to get out of the house.
Yeah.
But I'm somebody that can't be kept down anyway. Through a lot, and I'm one of these people that just keeps going. And I won't let this beat me. And unfortunately, my mother is very ill at the moment in the hospital in Dublin.
Okay.
And that's why I've been going up so frequently recently to see her. Hopefully, she'll be fine, and she's a very strong woman, and hopefully she'll pull through.
But
in the meantime, I can't go and see her because the flights are now all blocked until the 8th of April.
Yeah. And Susan, you mentioned that you're going to hospital tomorrow.
Yes.
That's an appointment for yourself, obviously.
It is for myself, yes. And if I'm stopped by the police, I'll have the form with me.
Okay. And you only tell me as much as you want, but are you worried about going to the hospital?
Slightly. In fact, my friends are all telling me I should wear a mask, but I haven't worn a mask at all so far. But I actually went out to the pharmacy at lunchtime, but a lot of shops close here at lunchtime still, so it's not opening until 4 o'clock. So later on, I'll take another stroll up to the pharmacy and I'll buy a mask if they have one.
Okay. And in terms of the cabin fever, what do you, obviously you're working, but is your downtime the same? You read or relax or paint or?
Well, I swim and I do swing dancing.
Okay.
And both of those courses have been cancelled until further notice.
Swing dancing.
So,
swing
dancing.
Swing,
it's dancing from the, it's from the 30s, 40s and 50s, jazz music.
It's in Dublin as well, very popular,
great exercise.
Yeah.
And I swim twice a week. I swim. I'm now quite a good swimmer, believe it or not, because I wasn't able to swim a few years
ago.
But
Susan, are the swimming pools closed?
Yes. All the swimming pools, all the gyms.
Gyms,
you can't do anything. There's going to be a big baby boom, I have to tell you. That's for sure.
Well predicted. Well predicted.
Yes. Oh no, for sure. The baby boom is on its way. In fact, I was laughing when I was at the pharmacy at lunchtime. It was closed and there's a big machine outside which sells condoms.
Okay.
And it said, out of order. And I said, uh-oh, even the condom machine is out of order.
So you predict a big baby boom in Italy at the end of this year?
What do you think people are doing, Joe? Everybody at home.
And what did someone say to me yesterday?
They can't go to cinema. They can't go to the theatre. They can't go to meet their friends. They can't go and have dinner parties. So what are they going to do?
Okay. Somebody said to me yesterday, there's an Italian phrase, what's a bread, olive oil and wine? Once we have the three of them, we can cope with the cabin fever.
Yes, I'm very well stocked up with wine here, thankfully.
Good stuff, okay.
And later on, I'm going to go to the supermarket and get some more food because one has to eat as well. One cannot live on wine alone. I guess. What do you think?
Yeah, I'll take your word for it, Susan. But I'm just thinking. I was watching something last night about somebody living in the wilderness, and he got a good 2 hours out of baking, just something he'd never done before, and he just said, "I got to follow a recipe here and take it from beginning to end." Yes. But anyway,
I baked a crostata yesterday. Crostata is what you would call a common jam tart.
Oh yeah, lovely.
But they call it crostata here, and it was really delicious, and it's also quite satisfying to bake something.
Yeah, of course it is. Say there, Susan, because you mentioned swing dancing, and this has prompted Patricia. I don't know what part of Ireland you're in, Patricia. Good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. Good afternoon.
I
do social dancing all over Ireland.
And
can you hear me?
Yeah, of course I can. And explain what social dancing is. I know that
the
answer is
social
in the name.
Dancing. Yeah, are people from the age about 60 up to 90.
Mm-hmm.
And you can social dance every night of the week in Ireland.
Okay.
And people travel from county to county and they travel to social dancing weekends. And I'm very concerned for that age group because they're the most vulnerable in the country and there's not a word about it, but the social dancing texts are still being sent for people to gather for social dancing weekends and nights out.
And of an evening... Do you dance with different people?
You dance hand to hand with different people and you're up close and personal like you see on the television on Sunday night.
Yeah.
And you can actually spray saliva on somebody's face and not be aware of it.
Mm.
And like we're talking now about the most vulnerable people who are post-chemotherapy, on treatment, who have had bypasses and heart surgery, who suffer with COPD.
Yeah.
And I am just absolutely, I cannot believe that the Department of Health haven't actually mentioned this group.
Yeah, but Patricia, isn't there, like, are you still social dancing?
Oh, no, no.
No, okay. Definitely. And surely, surely in the country we live in, with so much information and so much, so many experts, rightly so, that people should be able to, they shouldn't wait for a diktat from the government to say what to do or not to do.
A lot of these people depend on social dancing because they're isolated.
Okay.
These are people live alone, separated, divorced. They may have Alzheimer's partners in nursing homes, and the only social interaction they get is social dancing. And a lot of them would take the chance.
They would take the chance.
Yeah. Okay.
But surely,
and as well as that, they are also the invisible babysitters in the country for children.
They are also what, Patricia?
The invisible babysitters. They're not counted as part.
I mean, a lot
of grandparents look after children, school-going children, young children. And if they get infected, they get infected, they can infect their grandparents.
In fact, so it's a catch-22. They're telling people not to bring their children to the grandparents to be looked after.
We're saying that in Italy, Susan. Patricia, have you looked at the website today for social dancing? Are there events on over the next, St. Patrick's Day is a big event.
Well, I got two text messages yesterday, but as yet I haven't got cancellation. No, I wouldn't be going to it.
Yeah.
But I have just
Can you text back to those organisers and say, listen, say what you just said to me?
Well, I rang some of the hotels. And they actually don't organise it, but they have revenue from people coming to the hotels.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't blame them. Like, an awful lot, I mean, these people that organise social dancing are marvellous, and they're doing wonderful work all year for people, because the social dancing covers the six activities of daily life for people. It's a physical well-being, mental, emotional, social, spiritual, and financial.
Okay.
And they're wonderful people. And
and is it the same? Is there a national social dancing organisation?
There is.
NSDA, is there?
Well, I'm not on Facebook. I don't be on Facebook, but I know that there is a network out there. But a lot of the venues are run by people on their own. Now, my local dancing group has cancelled for a month.
Okay, well, that's a start, isn't it? Well, people have to take leadership positions themselves in this life. Somebody has to take leadership positions.
Yes,
and
yeah,
I know you have.
But don't have to wait for them to tell us.
I know, but I mean, I'm saying there are people now. Like, I feel that organisers should have already stopped sending those messages. I had a friend went dancing last weekend to Sligo, and they'll be dancing in Dublin this weekend.
Yeah.
And I just feel if the venue wasn't there, they couldn't do it.
Okay, okay. Well, let people hear those points and discuss them. Susan, I wish you well tomorrow, especially in the hospital.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I'm sending out a big kiss to my mother in Vincent's Hospital in Dublin, and hoping that she gets better and that I'll see her soon. And a big hello to all my friends and to my sister who listens to me.
Okay.
Every day, poor thing.
Okay, well done. That's Susan Cross living in Rome, as you said, from her kitchen in Rome. Patricia, thanks also. 51551, wash your hands.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And 51551, wash your hands. Catherine, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Well, how are you? You're worried. But share your worry, because people will be able to think about it and talk about it and help each other. There's no point in being a great veil of secrecy over everything. You fear you have coronavirus. Why?
Well, it's not even that I fear. I just feel that I'm not being tested. We came back from my family. We came back from Spain last Monday, the 2nd of March. and I wasn't feeling well on the Tuesday. I was in work. I had a temperature and wasn't feeling well all week. Was going up and down to work. And then on the Friday night, I couldn't breathe. I went to the care doc on Saturday morning, and she said, "Your throat is all swollen." She said, I'm the doctor, and she said that I'm going to put you on a steroid and some ibuprofen. For the whole weekend, I just was in an awful way. I just was really, really ill. On Monday, then, I went into work just feeling dreadful, and I had to come home out of work early. I rang my own doctor to see if I could get an antibiotic or something, and they said, "I want to get you tested with the HSE helpline." And they gave me the number, and they said, "You have to ring this number and to get tested for the corona." So I rang the number, and they said, because you haven't come from a high-risk country, we're not going to test you. You need to go back to your doctor. So I rang my doctor, and they told me to come in. And when I went in, they masked me, and they put me in isolation, and my doctor examined me, and she said, "I still want you to get tested for the coronavirus. Okay. I'm going to ring the HSE myself." She gave me an antibiotic and a steroid, and told me to stay off of work for a few days anyhow. So in the meantime, then she rang the HSC, and the HSC said, "No, we're not testing her." So on Monday night, then, I just could not sleep. I was gasping for breath in the night, couldn't sleep, couldn't breathe. I decided then at that stage I thought I had pneumonia. I said, "I'm going into the hospital the following morning." Went in then on Tuesday morning to the hospital, and was brought in. A mask was put over me. I was told in the hospital that at the moment there's mass hysteria going around about this coronavirus. "Do you think you have it?" I said, "No, I don't." I said, "I think I have pneumonia or something because I cannot breathe. That's why I'm here." Uh-huh. And they said, people now are just mass hysteria. You'll be here now for a few hours getting tests done and all. So in the heel of the hunt, anyhow, they didn't test me. We're not testing you for coronavirus because there's nobody in Kilkenny has it. So you can't have it. That's what I was told. And I did explain to them that, you know, I travel on the train every single day up and down to work, you know. That didn't really seem to matter. And the fact that I'd been out of the country in airports and travel around, you know, that didn't matter either. So they tested me for the influenza, the normal flu, and sent me home. So last night again, couldn't breathe. Just can't breathe tonight. Just having severe respiratory problems. Rang my own doctor again this morning, and she said, "I'm going to get in touch with the HSE again."
Okay.
And the HSE are still refusing to test me. And my son this morning is coughing and had a high temperature. And my own doctor is the only one that's telling me to stay at home, don't go out. And, you know, it's like that.
Well, you are. You know. Well, everyone is saying that. Stay at home, Catherine. Yes. Self-isolate.
You know, it's just I have, do you know what I mean, my family here. So, I mean, I don't know if I have the coronavirus. I don't know if my son has it. It's just the thing that they're not testing, you know. And that's what's kind of
well,
scary.
Well, they are testing, but they're deciding at this stage, having spoken to you, to hold off rather than... And have you... what's the progress of these symptoms? Do you feel you're getting, they're easing?
Well, it's just like during the day, it kind of eases off a little bit, but at night again, then I can't breathe again. You know, I'm on the steroid antibiotics, and it's just this constant cough, you know, and I don't, you know, it's just really feeling unwell now for the last week, you know. And they asked me in the hospital, "Do you think you have the coronavirus?" And I said, "Look," I said, "if I'm a low risk, I'm a low risk." I said, "It's just that I can't breathe in the night." But it's kind of like, what are you doing here? You know, they don't want, they don't want to see people.
And when you were, have you looked it up, Catherine, how many cases did Spain have when you were there? Because I know...
Because we were a little bit concerned travelling. I looked it up before we travelled and there was only 2 cases.
Okay.
But since then, even when we were over there, there was loads of cases after. Now it's the second worst country in the EU. That's what I was reading lately. But, I don't know if this is the advice we're getting from the HSE. And I'm just feeling like, you know, there's probably a lot more people out there that are not being tested. I don't know if it's lack of resources or what, but...
Yeah, Spain has 1,695 cases at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's in the range of 50 to 99 per million. For example, Japan has under 20 per million. Ireland has under 20 per million. So Spain is in the next cohort, so to speak. Sorry, he's in the next cohort is 20 to 49, the following cohort's 50 to 99 per million. Mm-hmm. So Spain is two levels above us. But all I can say is keep contact, and people can make their own judgment as well. There's enough information. You keep talking to your GP, but that experience is interesting. I hope you get through this fairly quickly, Catherine. Let me bring another Catherine. Thanks, Catherine. Catherine Mead. Catherine, what situation are you in? Catherine Mead, are you there, Catherine? No, it was Bernadette there in Galway.
Yes, Bernadette speaking to you.
What's your situation, Bernadette?
I wanted to express my solidarity and my support for Risa and for Fifi, the Asian women who've been abused in Dublin for wearing their masks.
Okay.
I'm a Dubliner myself. I live in Galway. My daughter-in-law is Asian.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a regular visitor to Asia, and it is normal etiquette and culture to wear, I would wear a mask in the metro when I'm traveling in Asia. I would wear it in big shopping malls or anywhere that, you know, there's a lot of people. I also have a compromised immune system, so I particularly wear one. And I've actually started to wear one in the last few years in Ireland. If I'm getting a CityLink coach to Dublin, I'd wear one to protect myself from getting a cold. If I'm flying even short distance, and it is very protective, I don't pick up colds the way I used to. And like Reese's boyfriend said, I feel so ashamed that Reese was treated like that.
Yeah,
I'm a native Dubliner. Yeah. And, do you know, I'm worried, Joe, that...
And there were two, as you heard, Bernadette, there were two independent separate calls.
Yeah.
One by Fifi from China originally, and one from Reese from Japan, both saying when they wore masks, which they say they normally do anyway, Fifi was abused in a supermarket by some dope.
And what's more troubling about it, Joe, is that Asian people are so delicate and so courteous. I have never, in all my time visiting Asia in the last 7 years, I have never once seen people abusing each other publicly in a supermarket or anywhere else. They're so courteous. And I just feel that Irish people just need to get over themselves and allow people to do whatever they want.
But that individual,
I was at two events in Galway in recent days. I was the only person wearing a mask, but nobody paid any attention to me. So why would they do it to an Asian person?
As I said,
it kind of speaks to racism, in my opinion.
Hopefully it's isolated instance. Okay, Bernadette, thanks indeed to all our callers. 51551, wash your hands, continues. Stay well. Look after each other. Lisa Marie Berry produced. And Ray Darcy is next.